go ahead now and let's start our polling here with our first one. So here we are. We're in case study two. Hopefully we're all on the same page here. You need to indicate to me now which of the following is the highest need for this enterprise, this ranch enterprise that Tom told you about. Number one, do they need to improve pregnancy rate? Number two, do they need to tighten their calving season? Number three, reduce calving difficulty in the herd. Do they need to increase weaning weight? That's number four. Number five, do they need to work on their post-weaning growth, so improve that? What about quality grade? Number six is improve USDA quality grade. Number seven is improve the yield grade on the cattle in general. Or number eight is other. That might be the safe vote, huh? No, I'm just kidding. Hopefully you've got her narrowed down. So vote now, vote often. But remember, the last number you hit is the number that we retain. So put your vote in. Okay. Next one is, what do you think is the second highest need for this enterprise? You have the same choices. You'll notice from the last time we've expanded it a little bit to include a couple more, but again, it's the same as the highest priority. Second highest priority need. Number one, in pregnancy rate, tighten the calving season. Number three, reduce calving difficulty. Four, increase weaning weight. Five, increase post-weaning growth. Six, improve quality grade. Seven, improve yield grade. Or eight, other. Okay, you ready to vote? Let's go. Okay, hopefully you got your vote in. And now our third highest item is the next item you're going to vote on. Again, you have the same choices that you can go with. I'm not going to repeat those because you should have those. Hopefully you can see the screen. Eric, let's go ahead and get the third priority. Let's vote now. Okay, you should all have your votes in, and we've got those logged into the computer. We're not going to review those yet. We're right, Eric? We're going to go to our bull selection. Now, based off of what you've determined are the weaknesses, hopefully you've identified two bulls that you can utilize in your program. You're the genetic consultant now. You're out there helping this guy decide which Gelvie bulls out of that catalog will fit. So the way this is going to be set up is you'll have all 10 lot numbers that are going to be up there on the screen, and you'll just push which number bull that you'd like to buy first. So which of the following bulls was your first choice? And that's pretty straightforward, 1 through 10. Are you everybody kind of got the idea what they got to do? Okay, Eric, let's have them vote on which bulls that they want to pick. Okay, you all should have got your first choice in. I'll bet you all bought the same bull. You'll take that bet? You'll take that bet. All right. All right, we got to vote one more time. We're going to poll you now. You've picked your first bull. Now what's your second bull that you would like to have? So we're concentrating. What's your second pick on bulls? Ready? Okay, all right. Let's go ahead and get that vote. All right. We should have everything logged in. We okay, Harry? You got everything? Cool. You got any idea? How many have we been having that we've gotten votes total on this deal? Without about 70, 75 votes that come in on each one of these. So kind of give you an idea of what we're getting here. Okay. with that, I'm going to shut up, and Dr. Fields is going to go through these questions, and we're going to get some discussion here on your priorities and finding out, you know, what's at the root of the problem here, and what you folks, as well as what Bob and Keith, are thinking along this line. So, Tom, I'm going to allow you to take it away, and I think, Eric, we're going to go back through the questions one at a time.
Okay, let's just go through this. And what we'll do is we'll go through the first three questions, the priorities, 1, 2, and 3, and then I think we'll do some discussion about that. We'll let Bob and Keith respond. I'll let some audience respond. Then we'll go on to which bulls and then why those bulls were selected. About half of the respondents want to improve USDA quality grade as an important measure for this and a focus point for this particular ranch. The second highest response was number 2, tighten the calving season. And tied for third would be 3, reduce calving difficulty, and 7, improve USDA yield grade. So half of you want to increase quality grade. Next, but way back, number 2, tighten the calving season, and then 3rd, reduce calving difficulty and improve yield grade. Okay, let's go to that second need. As you move through a case study, and I think on your own ranches, you probably begin to see some distribution change, and there becomes competing interests for your attention, and that clearly shows here. Improving USDA quality grade, 27% of you made that your second priority. So if we add those two together, 3/4 of you, almost 80%, have improving quality grade or improving marbling as an important part of your enterprise. Second, in this one, the second highest response would have been reduced calving difficulty. And then tighten the calving season sat right in behind that. And then pretty close behind that would have been improved pregnancy rate, increased post-weaning growth, and improved USDA yield grade. So you begin to see that there are competing needs inside this ranch. And you can just imagine if there were 5 sons who were doing this, we'd have the same thing going. So we'd have a lovely family feud at Thanksgiving time. Okay. Well, no, but the daughters would just have solved it and already bought the bulls. Right? It'd already be over. Third highest need. Increased post-weaning growth. And that's kind of interesting. That sat very low on the radar until we get to third, and now all of a sudden it jumps up with about half of you wanting to increase post-weaning growth. The second highest response here was reduced calving difficulty, and then third was improved pregnancy rate tied with increased weaning weight, and then the rest pretty evenly scattered. So it sounds like we have some consensus on what our first goal is. How many of you had improve quality grade and yield grade as 1 and 2? Okay. Why come?
They go hand in hand, because once you increase your quality grade, you're going to a certain extent, also increase your yield grade. On this particular ranch, if he wants to increase his profitability, he has to do both. He's got to get it up there. His yield grade right now, he's at, I would say, 2 or less. He's way below. 88% is 2 or below. He wants to be in that upper percentile to increase his profitability.
is you have dual interest to focus here on in the grid pricing scheme. Now, how many of you have found that your high marbling cattle tend to be your best performance cattle in terms of yield grade and cutability? How many of you have found that your highest performing yield grade cattle also tend to be your high marbling cattle? You get your data back. It's the rub, isn't it, in this business? Bob, you guys have fed some cattle. What's your take on, as a cow-calf producer focusing that far down the chain, where your balance of priorities needs to be?
Well, I think you need to focus on carcass traits to the extent that it won't diminish your fertility traits at home, and especially in a scenario like this where the other revenue source is actually selling replacement females, so there's a trade-off there. I mean, you don't want to do one for the other. But to answer your question, if a target was reasonable for me, we'd like to see them like 70% 1-2s and 3s yield grade and 70%, you know, choice or better. So that's about as good as we can get at this point in time.
And is 70% 1s and 2s or 70%?
No, I have 2-3s in there.
So you want to take 30% 4s?
No, well, not necessarily. I'm saying if you have 70% of the cattle that are choice are 1-2s
okay.
and 3s as an initial target to start. You don't want 30% of the choice cattle being 4s, no.
Okay. Now, how many of you are currently paid, and how many of your customers are currently paid directly for those performance of those traits? How many of you are retaining ownership is what I'm asking. How many of you are retaining ownership? How many of you plan to retain ownership in the future? How many of you know how your cattle perform in those two traits? Okay. How many of you have seed stock clients or seed stock suppliers who are beginning to gather data on the performance of their genetics and feed that back to you? Hey, hold your hands up one more time. I'll see that. Okay, that's a pretty high percentage. How many of you will plan to purchase bulls in the future from seed stock suppliers who do not have that information? So if you're a seed stock supplier, that might be a little thing you want to write down just real quick. Just thinking. Now, the other one that I want to ask about a little bit is a lot of you really focused on tightening the calving season. Okay, how many of you had that in your top three? Okay, pretty high percentage. How many of you had it as number one, your number one thing? Okay, let's talk about why. Hold your hands up again so I can see where everybody's at. We don't pick on several of you. As my 10-year-old asked, why?
I think having a larger percentage of your calves born in the first cycle is important, and those calves that don't that have later calving progeny are your cattle that aren't making you any money. And this guy's profit, its number one goal is profitability.
Why?
It makes the tighter we can get the calving season, since we calve out on the range, it makes our operation more efficient. We get them on the ground, get everything rolling in the right direction as soon as possible. We have less labor in that calving effort.
Who else had that number one? Why?
Is that realistic on that bigger range?
There's a good question. Is it realistic to tighten the calving season any further on this particular range operation? How many of you are mountain ranch in the mountain country? How many of you think that we can do considerably better than that calving spread? Okay? Fair number. So there are your colleagues, a high percentage of them think that they could tighten that up. And we'll talk about that in just a second. Jim?
Well, using this green sheet as a scoring deal, and I think it's valid,
it shows that and is in the below average for that. And comparing it to what I know, I'm sure that can be done better. As you look at the summary of the five-year deal with the average age of the cows, how it's increasing, how the percentage of weaning weight compared to cow, mature cow weight, looks to me like it's headed south to some degree. And when you're in this high country, the bigger these cows, the more it takes to maintain them through the winter. And so there's some trade-offs that I'm concerned about. And I think that'll address more of these problems quicker than anything else, is tightening that calving season.
I think there was someone over there as well.
I think another thing with tightening the calving season, you also get a more uniform product. You get more uniform in terms of the cattle that will be sold into the feedlot, as well as the females that you're trying to sell to as replacement females as well.
Guy right behind you.
You kind of stole my thunder, but that's exactly right. I mean, if you've got the females and you're in a 60-day calving period as opposed to a 90 or 120 days, you're trying to get these heifers bred at 13, 14 months old. It gives you a lot bigger percentage to choose from. And also, if you're selling lots of calves on the video or any other way, they're a lot more attractive in groups of five or six truckloads as opposed to half a truckload of culls but they're calves that are younger, weighing 75 to 100 pounds lighter.
Okay? We've established it's important. Now, my question would be, is how do we achieve it? And Keith and Bob, I'd like to just get your kind of response to the discussion so far and lead that next piece off, is how do we achieve that?
How do we achieve a tighter calving season? Pick the bulls up and hope the neighbor's bulls don't get in. We try to calve in about a 60-day window on the seed stock end of our ranch. On the commercial end of the ranch, the window's a lot bigger than that. And I don't know, on extensive range operations, I'm not sure how practical it is to send our cowboys out together two or three bulls and spend maybe a week trying to gather a bull or two. And in these mountain situations, it may be the same. We don't run on any public land, so I'm not really going to comment on that. But if you've got to spend a lot of time hunting through your cows and then try to get a bull to a set of pens, or if you've got to rope him or whatever, however you're going to gather this bull, I'm not sure that that's a good use of your cowboy's time. It may be, but I'd have to put a pencil to it and see.
Yes, ma'am.
The calving season is March 15th through May 30th. Did I miss on something on that, or is that March 15th to the end of April, not 85%? And you're saying he's going to get more than 85% of his calves in that first 45 days? I'm asking that because you're all saying you should tighten it up. How tight do you get it out there?
What's the goal?
Well, I would say that it's something that you ought to keep in the back of your mind and use the marketing opportunity when you can cull those later bred calves, and it makes money to do so to do it then, but I wouldn't spend a lot of time on it myself. I think if there was a trend that was moving, which we don't have the information here to say that we used to be 75 days and now we're 90 days and it's going south, then I wouldn't worry about it. You know, I might keep in the back of my mind, I wouldn't want to add things that would cause fertility issues, like lots of milk.
Let's go here now. Come right back to Keith.
I just tell him that bull pickup, we have a lot of bulls in tough country, and it don't pay for us. We just leave them in, and when they preg test, we cut off the late calver, and they bring more money pregnant, and they'd be open. And I think on a place this big, you could tighten the tail end there a little bit, but not very much. And
okay. Keith?
The other thing I didn't say a second ago is I wouldn't want to pour more feed out to the cows in order to get them to breed up early in the season. I think they need to be able to do it on the limited amount of feed that they get currently.
One thing in regards to tightening,
I don't think you're going to pull the bulls out of it. You're going to cull the ones at the end that are pregnant late. Now, that was a good comment. But look at the heifers in this deal. They're doing a hell of a job getting heifers bred early. And why can't they do that with a cow herd? And I think you got to front-end load that cow herd a little more. They're losing their second calvers. They're losing their genetics. So it looks like there's a management problem here. Not the first time they calve, because they got them bred early as heifers, but the second time they calve.
I hear you right on what I was going to say. On one point was they're losing their second calfers. Another thing, if you look at calving difficulty on heifers, anytime you cut out on calving difficulty, you'll help your calving interval, because cows that have to be assisted in birth usually don't breed back as quick.
Okay, good thoughts. One thing I just throw out, maybe he's calving all of them too early, but that's just a thought.
We can do it easier than you can do it in the upcountry. We don't have that problem, so that we can close it up easier there. And you do it with nutrition. I don't mean bulk feed, but you can reduce your feed. So, what?
Yeah. Let me repeat that for you. His notion was that in this scenario, it's hard to know. If you're from the southeast, you grow more grass and fix it.
Well, there's two things that come to mind. And is how many bulls are they running per cow, or 19, one bull to 15 cows, one bull to 18 cows, depends on the roughness of the country that you're running in. Where we run out, we're running about a bull to every 17 cows in the mountain range, and we increase our calving percentage that way. The second thing with the EPDs on these, as far as the carcass traits, I'm not too sure I'd want a set of replacement heifers out of this if I'm going to look at fours and fives on the yield grade and less than 50% choice on the quality grade for replacement heifers.
Okay, good point. To keep us moving, so we got to get to going here, and we'll come back to this in a second, but on the third highest need then, all of a sudden, we begin to refocus a little bit on post-weaning growth. As you evaluated that scenario, and you looked at the feedlot performance, was there anything that concerns you in that particular data? Yes, sir.
The averages look fine, but when you look at the trends, they're not so fine.
Okay, and which trends worry you?
Feedlot efficiency worries me a lot.
Okay, feedlot efficiency. Did everybody see that? Starting to slip. Now, what's he going to do about that to fix that genetically? Bob, if you're in that situation, and Keith, how do you fix that? Yeah, don't be shaking your head, Bill. Bob, we'll start with you, and then Keith will agree with you.
Well, I don't know what you can do in bull selection without efficiency data, but I would expect you'd have to maximize heterosis at all costs in this to get it headed back the other way. And not knowing fully what the history was here, there may be some loss of heterosis in the cow side of it. So I can't say for sure, but that's a tough one because there's nothing on the bull selection seat you can move us forward with that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think in the next, let's say, 10 years, we'll have some feed efficiency EPDs or relative feed intake data on some of these cattle, and we can maybe address that issue right now. I agree with Bob. There's really not a whole lot genetically we can do.
Better go find the guy that he bought his bulls from 5-6 years ago and go back to getting these bulls there. That might solve it.
Did everybody get what Bob just said? I think that's pretty important. He's got the. You look at that data and you look at what those bulls were doing back in 99 and 2000, he's down there in that low 6 on conversion, and all of a sudden we've changed up there 7.5 and 8. You might want to talk about going back to what you used to do, maybe. Bill wanted to make a comment, right?
I can't throw my hands up and say, well, I'm going to wait 5 years for feed efficiency data. I want to make selections now. And the thing that the data says, the thing that's most highly correlated with
feed efficiency is post-weaning growth. So I think when you make your selection on these bulls, you just can't give up a lot of growth, or you're gonna, or that feed efficiency thing is gonna keep going that direction. So the highest thing we've got to choose from in EPDs to affect feed efficiency right now is post-weaning growth.
Okay, let's, because where we're at on time, let's switch on over now and let's look at which bulls you purchased. And we'll write these down up here as we go along. Wow, let the silent auction part of this begin. By the way, in the partnership, this is the one I produced, Stro. Just want to remind you that. Number two is by far the most popular bull. 46% of you made him your first choice, so the one who bought him would have been the fastest one to the board. So whoever's got the best foot speed in silent auction would have won this deal. Then it spreads way out. Second most, the two bulls that then got the second highest number of votes for first choice would have been 3 and 10, followed by 6 and 9, followed by 1, 5 and 4, with neither 7 nor 8 making it onto the first choice list. So if you want to write down those numbers down the side, it's 7%, 46% for 2, 12% for 3, 2% for 4, 5% for 5, 8% for 6, 0 for 7 and 8, 8% for 9, and 12% for 10. Okay? Let's take a quick look now. Let's flip over and look at the second. And the data begins to spread out pretty good here. I'm just going to write down the list of bulls, and you can write down the percentages just so you've got that as a record. First, bull one, 5% as the second choice, 13% for two, 2% for three, 7% for four, 15% for five, 8% for six, 10% for seven, 10% for eight, 13% for 9, and 18% for 10. If you are a seed stock supplier, what is the good news about this slide? We sold all the bulls! Whew. That's the good news.
Mission accomplished.
Wow. Man, now we can have a post-sale party. Okay. Let's go back. Can we bounce back to the first choice there? Yeah, first choice bull. Lots of you liked number two. We'll talk about him in a minute. Stroh really liked 7 and 8. He thought they were really good. Can you explain to him why didn't you use 7 or 8? John, why not? Why didn't you use, clearly you didn't make 7 or 8 your first pick. Why did they get no vote?
Stability was low, and scroll circumference was negative, and cabin ease, and birth weight.
Okay. Anybody have any other reasons why 7 and 8 didn't make it into the premier lineup of this sale?
We got one guy said they were too cheap over here. They can't be good if they're cheap.
Guys are saying.
God, no way.
Here, let me grab Keith for a second.
Hey, John, you said you didn't like the birth weight on number 7. Is that what you said, John Young? Okay. If you guys want to think just a minute about some of the philosophy behind EPD selection, I'll make this quick, Stroh, so I don't take up much time. There's a big push on right now with through the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium to select bulls based on what we call economically relevant traits, ERT. Some of you might have seen some talks about it. When we're talking about birth weight, what are we trying to predict? Anybody? Calving ease. Thanks, sir. If you look at the calving ease of this lot 7 bull, he's 99, right? there's some other bulls in this bunch that are 99 also for calving ease direct. So is he significantly different from a bull that's, say, 101 or 102 is the question you have to answer. And then if you look at his calving ease of his daughter, that's 108. So is this bull a hard calver or not? And, well, I'm not sure. Well, we don't have frame score. We don't really have frame score EPDs here, but it's possible he's a larger mature size bull. But and there definitely is a correlation with birth weight and mature size. So you've got to say, I'm not saying you're wrong, John. Genetics is a compromise, and every time you choose a bull, then obviously you've lost the opportunity to choose another bull, or every time you add a trait to a genetics program, you reduce the progress you're going to make in a certain other trait. So it's all a trade-off, and you have to decide how much of that trade-off you're willing to accept.
Now, I just want to point out, I think their numbers, these two bulls are number two and number three in the sale for marbling. And so what I'm hearing you say is you're not willing to give up all this other stuff just to chase marbling to fix your what was almost everybody's thought was the number one or number two priority in this case, which was to change quality grade. Okay, I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. Okay. What let's do is let's just kind of scroll. Will this work if we just kind of go down this list of bulls and find the people who liked them?
Tom, an interesting fact, though, number nine, I think, is your number two marbling bull. And, boy, people didn't bounce on him real heavily. I don't know why, but they didn't.
Let's ask that question. Why not nine?
Well, we obviously had some folks that selected him, that's for sure.
Here's something right here. Let me hand this mic to Frank.
In our conversation on yearling weight, that bull really, really scores low. I mean, there's not a lot of post-weaning growth in him, if I'm reading that right.
Yeah, now, let's just, I want to ask Bob and Keith that question. How much difference in yearling weight do we have to chase to get moving in that direction? Where are the difference? I mean, I guess the point is where are a difference between two bulls and yearling weight EPD a big enough difference to worry about?
I guess what I would say, if we're going to use the Gelby breed today as a terminal choice, and we're going to be trying to produce replacement females for customers as well, I would have to weigh yearling weight in there as something that I wouldn't want to select out of the top of the breed. I think that maybe breed average or above would be my selection criteria, because I really don't need, in this scenario, if I was recommending to somebody, I don't need 1,500 pound mature cows, and we can get that done with the top 1-2% of this particular breed. And I happen to be a Gelby breeder, so I can tell you that those 80 and 90 yearling weight 10 EPD cow are probably too big for this guy's female customers, and that's how I'd answer that. So I didn't answer your question.
Tom, we have a comment on one that on number two here that I think might be pertinent. So Joe,
with reading the scenario here, what this ranch does, they sell a lot of their females as bred females to area ranchers. And according to what I've read here, you know, the higher the calving, daughter's calving is, EPD, the better. You think that half your calves are going to be females. You're selling these things as bred. I have a problem with number two having a 98 for daughter's calving ease. When you're selling those dollars and you think this is where, you know, you're going to have potential of losing these customers, you're going to be like on the feed efficiency thing. You're going to need the guy's going to want to go somewhere else to buy his replacements if you whip that on him.
And calving ease was a pretty important issue in both. It showed up pretty high in both first, second, and third priority in people's response. Okay, good point.
wasn't also number two, one of the lower bulls on stayability. Did y'all see that? And again, going with what you just said, Joe, that might not be what you want to breed into these. Keep in mind it's a fairly lowly heritable trait. Sir, he wants to make comment. Okay.
The question, your top priority, let's say, is to improve the pregnancy rate. Which one of these EPDs do you pick out that matches that? Or I couldn't figure that one.
That is a wonderful question. And it is one that I'm going to defer to my colleagues.
Yeah, I don't know is the proper answer on that question. What I try to do in now, this is my own herd on a western range environment where we're lucky to grow 1,000 pounds of forage per acre. We try to, I won't say minimize, but we try to moderate milk EPD significantly. Now, I'm not talking about a plus 20. I'm talking about a 10 or less. Okay, now that's not necessarily applicable to everybody in the country, but that's our answer to a reproductive EPD right now.
Let's just go with that thought for just a quick second. I want to just do a quick poll on this milk thing, because I think that's an important question that's going to fit in here. Let's think about this environment, okay? You got high country, lots of snow, high maintenance, winter cost type deal. How many of you think that you can sustain over time milk EPDs higher than plus 25 for a dual-purpose breed like Gelpie in that environment? How many of you would say plus 25 is good? What about plus 20 to plus 25? Is that the appropriate range? Plus 15 to plus 20. Few hands going up. Plus 10 to plus 15. How many of you less than plus 10? Let me ask you this question. How many of you have purchased a bull of any breed that was not going to be used as a terminal sire that was negative in milk?
John, no. Everybody knows negative's bad. Negative, why in the world? Now you got my curiosity of why would you do that? Dadgum.
If you take a negative Gelpie or a negative Simmental on an Angus basis, it's still a positive, and you don't need 35 pounds of milk in a crossbred cow.
Right on the money. Right on the money. Okay? Scroll, you had a question back here.
Several of us made the observation that those high milk bulls and maybe low marbling, such as 2 and 1, had low stayabilities and everything. For the 3 bull, which he didn't have much carcass merit, but he'd last forever. So it's kind of the good ones go quick and the sorry ones stay around forever.
So you might want to go to a different operation to buy your bull then. Is that what you're telling us? All right.
Yep, I'm bad and good at it.
Yeah, I'm bad and good at it. There you
go. Hold on, we got a comment right here.
Well, I just have a question. We haven't heard a mention of tenderness. I had the experience last night of going to what is supposed to be a pretty good restaurant here and having a very beautiful piece of prime rib, and it was tough. I think that's one of the worst problems we have, and we haven't touched on it.
Hey, excellent point. And I would just, as a follow-up to that, do we have a direct measure for tenderness in this industry that you can use to select bulls from? Okay, and what is that?
Well, there are at least 2, maybe more, places that are evaluating for the presence of certain genes, which we believe have something to do with tenderness. Probably they do.
And so we have in being developed, hopefully, a series of markers over time that will tell us progressively more about that trait. So when we come back in about 5 years and redo this, we'll be able to hand you 97 pages of data.
Comment.
I think we're trying to do everything here, and he can't raise great replacement heifers and still get great cattle that are going to convert well at the feedlot. So it's big enough he could have a maternal trait herd and a terminal cross herd and raise replacements for himself and the neighbors and have his terminal cross. Or he's going to do them all maternal and, you know, keep his own and then raise lots of replacement heifers, then he's just going to have to admit that. And I think we need to take a lesson from the hog boys. You go to a hog barn, nobody shows you a balanced boar. They laugh you out of the room. There's the boars over there that make bacon and ham, and these on the left make gilts. We don't have any balanced boars.
But does our marketplace push us towards the pork approach yet? That's
Well, maybe not yet, but if we're kind of thinking ahead here, way we're, you know, if we're going to get the perfect replacement heifer, we're going to have to sacrifice feed conversion. Show me the perfect feedlot steer, and I don't want his heifer at my place. Show me the perfect replacement heifer, and the brother's going to get along, but he ain't going to do great.
The point Dallas is made, I think it's really good, is that mating system is every bit as important as the selection of the sires that go into that mating system.
I think as we look at this, we need to keep in mind what the goals of the operation are, what our overall goals are. I'm not choosing bull number two to be my replacement heifer bull. We already know that he's not keeping his replacements out of this. He wants to have a market for them if that is the case that he has some left over, but most of these are going to the feedlot.
Okay. Bob.
I think that the most important thing that we need to keep in mind is that if their goal is to produce a product that's a market or a value-added type product, which in my business a replacement heifer is, the worst thing on earth you can do is sell a replacement heifer that won't work. That will come back to haunt you in spades. And neighbors talk about all the bad things. You can do 2,000 good things, and if you do one thing bad, everybody in the valley is going to know about it. So I would respond to say that if that's part of their goals, I think you need to do a good job of that.
Okay.
In the overall score of these bulls, what are we trying to accomplish? You know, we're looking at one thing. For every action, there's a reaction. What are we willing to give up to reach this success? Are we willing to drop our milk to 5 or 6 or put it on a minus scale to get yearling weights or to get the EPDs that work out as far as your carcasses are concerned? Right now, the reason the reason number 7 wound up low on that and 8 wound up 0 on the first go around is because everybody picked 46. We also put a price limit in there of a $5,000 sale. You got a $3,000 bull and a $1,500 bull. You go home with $500 in your pocket, and you still have two bulls that maybe meet your criteria. If you spent the whole $5,000, you didn't change that criteria at all or very little upon these EPDs of the other bulls that were in the $2,000 range.
Okay, excellent point. Excellent point. So what time do we have to be done again by?
About 10 minutes. So we don't want to cut discussion off, but at the same time, I think we have a couple, three things we want to poll you on that are fairly important. So let's do that and see if we have a little discussion on that, okay?
Let's go to those next. Hopefully, as you went through this process, you found out that you didn't have all the information you wanted. And so what we want to know from you, in which of the following areas did you have the least amount of information upon which to make a decision? Where were you the most limited in terms of the information available? Was it in reproductive performance, pre-feed yard growth, feedlot performance, carcass performance, overall profitability, or other? So in terms of the traits you had to select bulls from, the information you had upon which to select bulls to meet those three pressing needs that you identified, did you have the least amount of information relative to 1, reproductive performance, 2, pre-feed yard growth, 3, post-weaning or feed yard performance, 4, carcass performance, 5, overall profitability, and 6, other? So let's go ahead and start the time. Okay, let's see what you have to say.
overall profitability. Now, we all kind of giggle at that, but I would say, how many breed association people in the room? Breed association people? Two or three of you? You just got a message. Your customers just asked for something. We would sure like to next year see you roll this out at NCBA in San Antonio, so we'll look forward to that. It's going to be good. Comes down to that, and in the end, I think that's one of the challenges we have in bull selection is how do we know which choices we make actually affect bottom line performance? And I think that's a very important thing. Okay, very important. That was overwhelmingly large pre-feed yard growth. I would just ask real quick, what were you missing? What would you like to have had in the way of information relative to pre-feed yard growth that you didn't have? Any of you that answered on to pre-feed yard growth where you wanted more information, what would you like, what could they provide that you didn't have? What's missing? Well, somebody had to answer that. Cost of performance and backgrounding. Good. Cost of performance and backgrounding. Health performance likely being a good portion of that. Good. Be interesting to have an EPD on whether or not calves get sick or not, wouldn't it? Yes, sir. Percent healthy calves. No pulls, not sick, still 4 feet down instead of 4 feet up. Yep. Way to measure the success of a vaccination health program. Interesting. Comment over here, Daryl.
Nope.
Okay, let's go to that next question. Now, this one, seed stock guys, you have to either, if you're buying some, I guess, from other customers, you can do that. But seed stock guys, I'd like you to abstain from this. I'd like just your customers to answer this question. In general, do you find the performance data provided by seed stock producers understandable and user-friendly? In general, do you find the performance data provided by seed stock producers understandable and user-friendly? One, almost always. Two, sometimes. Three, occasionally. Four, almost never. Let's start the time. Okay, interesting distribution. Almost always 21%. Sometimes, which is the answer to did you brush your teeth, 51%. Occasionally, 21%, almost never 7%. Almost a third of your customers do not understand or like the format in which you're providing data. That's interesting. Only about a fifth are pretty darn happy in general with what's going on. That's an interesting piece, and we'll make sure that gets woven into our thought process a little bit. So I think that's an important finding. Next question. In general, now again, this is a blind survey. We don't know who anybody's deal is, what you're responding, what we don't know who your suppliers are, but this is just kind of a benchmark. In general, rate the service your primary seed stock provider gives you in terms of making the best genetic choices for your enterprise. One, excellent. Two, good. Three, average. Four, fair. Five, poor. So kind of A, B, C, D, F. So let's go ahead and start that up. Interesting distribution. Excellent 13%, good 29%, average 34%, fair 24%, nobody flunked out. Okay, that's interesting. And that's something I think just that we'll make sure gets passed around a little bit. Let's go to that last question. Okay. Clearly, there was a lot of competing need for information here in this in both cases. So let's ask this question. Which of the following would be your first choice for a new genetic evaluation estimate? Would it be one, a reproductive merit index where lots of the data gets crunched into one value, perhaps reported in dollars? Two, a feedlot profit index that took all of the feed yard information that could be gathered and put into one number, an index number, perhaps reported in dollars. Three, a net carcass merit index that took all of the quality and yield grade, carcass weight, and other data that could be accumulated that would give you a net carcass merit index, perhaps reported in dollars. And four, a maintenance cost index that took data about mature weight and milk production, etc., and gave you some measure of how much net energy would be required to maintain a bovine. Yeah, we can do that. We'll do that. Good point. We can do that? Okay, so let's we're going to let you vote twice for your first and your second. So this one will be your first choice. If you could have just one of those for Christmas next year in your stocking, which one would it be? Okay. And then, which of those would you... We ready to do that yet? Okay, and now... If you could pick another one, what would the second one be? If you could pick another one, what would the second one be? Okay. They're going to produce us a result here. Okay, this would be first choice, 49% for a reproductive merit index, 39% for a maintenance cost index. Tells me that cow-calf producers would like to have more information about the genetics of how cattle will perform in their environment that affects them the most directly in terms of their profitability. I think that's an important message. This one splits it out now. Your second choices, over on the right-hand side, again, reproductive merit index, maintenance cost index. We're also the highest response for both first and second choice. And with feedlot profit index and net carcass following. Pretty interesting. Challenge of getting those produced? Certainly. But possible? Likely. What let's do is I want to give both Bob and Keith a moment to have some summary statement about what we've talked about this morning and talk a little bit about this process. And then we're going to let Dr. Strobing come up and wrap it up as a summary. So Bob and Keith, why don't you take a shot at it?
Well, I don't really have too much to add to what's been said here, but I think it's an interesting scenario to go through to that we all can take home and basically think about how we use genetics to move our programs one way or another and the traits that go along with it. I didn't realize we were going to do this last voting part of it, but as this industry changes and moves towards profitability as something we can select for using biological data, I think that's going to be some interesting times to look at. So I would challenge the great professors behind us to do so.
How many people think we have too many EPDs to get your head around individually? I think my summary statement is we need decision support tools from, I don't know if it's universities or wherever, that we can combine EPDs into selection indices and make proper selections accordingly.
Okay. Well, I want to first of all say thanks to the team here, and from a wrap-up standpoint, I think that you know, we've tried to put you through an exercise we think that has many elements that are very important to you, and probably bottom line, one of the most important things is writing up your own case study. You know, you've got to get your herd data into a position so that you can go through logically and determine what your problem is so that you can start addressing it. Enough said on that. Secondly, making those hard decisions in the traits and how they trade off has been very well discussed. And Tom and I and the rest of the gang up here, we really appreciate your input. At the outset, we said that this was going to be a session where you would be involved. Hopefully, you'd learn from one another. And I think that's happened today. Certainly, the comments, the discussions we've had have been excellent. So we appreciate that from our side. I'd also like to say thanks to Eric and all of our help up front here to do our demographics and how you voted on things. And doing it on the fly at the end is very impressive. I appreciate that as well. A couple housekeeping chores before you leave. Please do not take the voting polling machine. It does not work on your remote TV. There is a box at both, and if you don't want to carry it back there, fine, we'll pick them up afterwards. But please leave those. Or put them in the box back there. Second item from a homework, there is an evaluation form that was at your site. I don't know if you saw it or not. We'd like you to fill out the evaluation on this session and leave that in a box that's at the back or right outside the door. I'm not sure where that is. But please do the evaluation. If you could, take about 2-3 minutes and mark off whether we performed, underperformed, or overperformed, one way or the other. And also, I think if there are future topics, Renee Lloyd, who organizes this, as well as Pfizer, would really appreciate any ideas you have for future Cattlemen's Colleges. As a host with Tom, we'd really like to thank Pfizer for their contribution towards this, and hopefully when you see those reps, tell them thanks as well. With that, one last item. You know, you all paid a fee to eat as well, and we're instructed to tell you that it's immediately down to your right. You go out the hallway and turn left, and across the hallway, what's that, the Phoenix Room, I believe it was? But anyway, that, huh? Tucson, all right. That makes sense, Tucson. All right. So you'll be going to the Tucson Room for your luncheon, and with that, thank you. We appreciate your attendance today.